Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week, the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance take you beyond the numbers and hype, right to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week, we're exploring another potentially critical angle in the crisis prompted by the global coronavirus pandemic. In the last couple of editions of this programme, we've examined the economic and market impacts and learned how data and analytics are being used to better understand ground truth in this uncertain time. Today, though, with the help of the remarkable and inspirational thought leaders at the forefront of innovation that UBS supports through its Global Visionaries programme, we're going to look at the potential impact of the COVID-19 outbreak on the developing world. With us today are UBS Global Visionary Kennedy Odede, the founder of Shining Hope for Communities, or SHOFCO. This grassroots non-profit empowers dwellers in Kenya's urban slums, like Kibera, where Kennedy himself grew up, by providing essential services such as healthcare and education, and linking these to a community-led advocacy platform. As the first cases of COVID-19 were confirmed in Kenya, SHOFCO had already taken wide-ranging action to protect the health of the country's most vulnerable. Joining Kennedy today is Dr. Suzanne Murray, Director of the Global Health Programme and Chief Veterinary Medical Officer at the Smithsonian Conservation Biology Institute. Suzanne created the Global Health Programme after her team of veterinarians experienced a growing demand to address issues related to the survival of endangered wild species. Since 3/4 of human infectious diseases come from wildlife, they realised they could save people and animals with the same methods. Achievements so far include the discovery of 2 new coronaviruses in bats. Dr. Murray also acts as the Smithsonian liaison to the Foreign Animal Disease Threat and Pandemic Preparedness subcommittees of the White House's Office of Science and Technology. Kennedy Odede and Suzanne Murray, welcome both to the programme. And Kennedy, perhaps I might start with you. Can you give us a sense, if you can, of what exactly might lie in store if this pandemic strikes in developing countries, strikes casual communities like slum areas, with the force we've already seen with such tragic consequences in countries like Spain and Italy? Give us a sense of what that could look like.
As I look around and try to understand what's happening and what has happened in the Western world, which I call much more developed compared to developing countries, so far we have not seen an arrest, protest coming out. Why? Because there's order. Government of France doing this, New York, they have this kind of plan, whatever, from the governor. So when I look from Kenya perspective, for example, right now there is no much structure. So many people live under a dollar, for example, in Nairobi and in other parts in Africa. So what happens is that when you bring in lockdown, well, that sounds different from the Western world. It means that those who are poor, living below wages, will live in a single room. Eh? So what might happen is that there'll be a lot of insecurity going to happen. People are going to go out by force. They're going to be fight. You know, so I see riot. I hope it doesn't happen. So right now, I was in my community in Kibera slums, and I met some young men and women, and they told me, Kennedy, we are telling you that it's better for us to die from corona than to die from hunger. When our belly is empty, we're going to get out there and put our hands in anything we can get. And that's scary, you know?
Suzanne, clearly that is a terrifying prospect. Maybe if I can get you to sort of pop your pandemic preparedness hat on. I know we've seen you addressing the House in DC in the past weeks, of course. How are you able to try and make some sense, to put some kind of scale that people can understand on exactly the kind of potential threat that exists that Kennedy's described there in Kenya, for example?
You know, Tom, just before that, as I'm listening to Kennedy, I can really see the imagery of that. And I also wanted to thank Kennedy for his work. It's the thing I've always wanted to be a part of, and I'm so proud to know you, Kennedy. So visually, the imagery of someone saying, I'd rather die of an illness rather than hunger. Wow, what a powerful statement. In terms of the pandemic, so yes, we know that it is coming. We know that it's in Kenya already. And we know that it's in many sub-Saharan African countries. So it's a huge concern. On the positive side of things, we've been working through a number of different programs and with Smithsonian to be working in Kenya, specifically with National Museums of Kenya, the Zoonotic Disease Unit, and Kenya Wildlife Services to help prepare as best we can for not only this virus, but other viruses that are out there and will be coming. One of the things that our team has been working on with our Kenyan colleagues is even a little bit further upstream. So if we think of an outbreak and we wait until people are getting ill to then try and find out why are they getting ill and then build the laboratory capacity and identify the virus and then try and figure out where the virus came from and who's the host, we've lost hundreds of thousands of human lives and trillions of dollars. So what we've been doing, along with our partners in Kenya, has been doing both human and animal syndromic surveillance in Laikipia, but then also working with our partners to do the wildlife health surveillance and build the laboratory capacity. The wildlife health surveillance is really important because we know that 75% of these viruses come from wildlife and then go to humans, as this one did. And then we also work with our laboratories to get everybody trained up to be able to have the latest PCR products to be able to quickly identify these viruses so we can have a quicker response. Indeed, what we've been seeing and have been seeing in that our teams are working along with KEMRI to help track and identify positive and negative cases.
Well, Kennedy, you already spoke, as Suzanne mentioned, so powerfully about people in Kibera and, you know, literally around on the streets of Nairobi explaining they face life and death decisions almost every day. And so strangely, this doesn't change those dynamics. And maybe it explains why they're slightly more sanguine. Can you tell us a bit more about the big picture? Are you reassured that enough is being done to address lack of planning and provision? Are you in any way reassured that any moves are being made that will protect those who are most vulnerable, the kinds of people you work with every day?
As Suzanne talked about what they are doing now already on the ground, it's really important because as we are sad on this virus, there's good news. This is good news. Africa being the third frontier, Africa being the last one, if you think about this, you know, it hit Europe and they were taking it not serious, truth be told. And I feel like, Suzanne, Africa has been serious a little bit. So we are so lucky that we are ahead. So if we do whatever is can happening now, because look at New York, look at Italy, look at France, they were too late. So somehow, as Suzanne said that, we are so lucky that if we put enough measure, we can save lives. And I'm happy to hear that, Suzanne. So in some ways, I'm hopeful that if Africa can learn from Europe, from Western world, we can be ahead. I've seen already what's happening in Ethiopia. So for example, my only worry is that working with people who are vulnerable, those who are underprivileged society, is a problem that existed before Corona. That's my worry. So these are places that government never provide services. You come from your single 10 by 10 house, you walk in a sewage. There is no clean water. There's not even water for you to drink. What about wash your hands? So these are the things that are really scaring me. And yesterday I was with the Minister of Health. We had a meeting one-on-one with him to talk about slums because they know very well that slums is where they're going to be a disaster. How do you start? This is interesting. How do you start to go to slums? And if you are government, you never cared about that before. There was no infrastructure. There is a dilemma. So that's when things, organizations like SHOFCO, which are more grassroots, are coming in. So what are we doing now? So what are we trying to do now? We try to cover up Kibera, entry point, and other slums, and start sending young people and women in the community talking about Corona. You can prevent it. Wash your hand. Don't greet anybody anymore. I know our African culture is love, is feeling, is holding. But for now, it's going against us. So wash more hands frequently with soap. And SHOFCO has clinics in the slum. If your temperature is high, you are feeling throat, go there to be measured, to be tested. You know, so those are the things I try to do. But to be honest with you, I don't see enough measures. I think they don't know what to do. Because first of all, how does slum exist? The lack of planning. So how will you come in now? So that's the challenge the government are facing in Africa.
I really like the idea of what Kennedy was saying in terms of the, you know, education and how important it is to give people the knowledge they need to protect themselves. And that's an underlying theme of some of the programs we've been working on. Tom, I'm not sure if I've described before a much larger program that had been funded through USAID. It's called PREDICT. We'd been working as a collaboration that's led by UC Davis, but five organizations working together to, over the last 10 years, to build capacity, laboratory capacity, and create community engagement programs and education programs, and do the wildlife health surveillance and the government networks as well to put some of these pieces in place in the 30 countries that are most likely to experience an outbreak like this. So China was one of those countries in which we've been working in Asia as well, and obviously Kenya and Africa. So when we think about, are we prepared or if there's something we could have done, imagine what this would be like if we did not have laboratories and the PCRs in place already to help identify the virus, or if we hadn't been doing the critical work to know that some of the species in which are likely to be reservoirs would be primates, bats, and rodents. And if we didn't know that some of the riskiest spots are the wildlife markets or the open air markets where there's wildlife. So to some extent, it's hard to recognize what we have done already, but those building blocks of knowledge that we know the types, the viral families that are most dangerous, and we know from where they came, that gives us a lot of knowledge to fight. So this is what it looks like when we are prepared, believe it or not.
Can I ask you both to weigh in on the role of philanthropy in curtailing this and preventing the next outbreak potentially? And I wonder, do we risk keeping too much expectation or burden on philanthropy rather than demanding more from other key stakeholders? Kennedy?
For me, it's all about partnership. And truth be told, we think that government should take charge. And as you know, places like even in America, sometimes there's not enough from the government. You know what I mean? So, and we should be having what is called much more structured way of doing things, you know what I mean? And philanthropists, people should come together and fight in a common goals. So right now there's more pieces, you know what I mean? So we see that's a challenge. So if they can come together and see because first of all, why do we have philanthropy in Kenya? For example, there's a space for government. They're not doing something that is a gap. But there should be clear that right now philanthropy is coming in and the government will finish. I mean, we should find government, private sector, philanthropy partnership. I think for me, that will be the best way.
I'm agreeing with you, Kennedy. You know, there's that saying that no one can do everything, but everyone can do something. The key is partnerships. If there's something that we can all be doing, the government definitely needs to lead. But the government has, you know, a number of different, in all our countries, the government has a number of different priorities. And there's a huge gap where that philanthropy can really assist and help.
Well, let me ask you both then, and it's interesting, obviously, we're talking to you in part because you've both been recognized as for your global visionary work by UBS, and UBS has its own Optimus Foundation. It's launching a COVID-19 response fund to fight the pandemic, and that's going to support both global and local response projects, the kinds of things you guys have been talking about. And we'll tell our listeners how they can get involved with that. But maybe if I could ask both of you, and what would be your sort of call to arms, your call to action, if you like, to people listening? To be honest, wherever they are in the world, maybe you would remind people to look at some of your own channels to look at your work and find out how they can support it. But what would be your message? I guess we're trying to be optimistic. We're trying to face things head on. What would you sort of urge people to think about right now?
So, okay, I think if you are being honest to yourself, right now we have emergency. And when there is something like this that's going to clear humanity in some of the places, we can no longer wait. It's not the time to sit down and reflect and wait for this and that. Just as we did in our community, we start washing hands, you know, we start doing that. And right now, we are in my place, for example, people don't have basic needs. I mean, and we should have, right now, I like to ask people, how can they start doing something now? You mean? Because the world needs them now. This is a time. There's a time for discussion, there's a time for partnership, and there's a time that we want action. Okay? So we'll be very happy to work with them and to see how we can bring our ideas, our thoughts, you know. And we are ambassadors on the ground, you know, Suzanne and I, in different fields. And we can help, you know what I mean, through that kind of partnership.
My main message is for everyone. We are all connected. We're connected by the same air we breathe. We're connected by, you know, the global economy, and we're connected by things that we might not want to be connected by, like things like viruses. So it is the time for us to all band together. And we think of the economy on a global level. It's time for us to think of health on a global level. And I also agree with what Kennedy said, that the first priority now that we're in this mess is indeed to, you know, provide the basic needs. There are people suffering and dying. That has to be the primary issue right now. At the same time, we knew this epidemic was coming. We know that they're coming more and more frequently. And it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. So while it's hard to think of the future now, because we have such pressing humanitarian needs, I would urge everybody that it's also not the time to let up on our preparations. So there's a lot that our teams can do in terms of diagnostic and rapid response. There's a lot that we can do in terms of the educating and getting, you know, water and soap to the people that need it. And it's a time to lean in. There are a number of wonderful organizations, including the Smithsonian's Global Health Program, that strives to work to save lives, both human and animal, and Kennedy's team as well. There's a lot going on. You know, no effort is too big or too small. We're all connected. It's all of our responsibilities to engage.
Fantastic. Well, that's a great sentiment, I think, on which to close. Suzanne Murray and Kennedy Odede, thank you both very much indeed for being on the program. And that brings us to the end of this edition of the Bulletin with UBS here on Monocle 24. My thanks to UBS Global visionary Kennedy Odede, the founder of Shining Hope for Communities, and his visionary counterpart, Dr. Suzanne Murray, director of the Smithsonian's Global Health Programme. You can find out more about the work of Kennedy and his colleagues and partners by visiting shofco.org. And to learn more about Suzanne and her work, visit nationalzoo.si.edu/global-health-programme. And indeed, if you want to know more about any of UBS's global visionaries or the programme itself, go to ubs.com and search Global Visionaries. Earlier, I mentioned the UBS Optimus Foundation's COVID-19 Response Fund to help fight the pandemic. You give, and the foundation matches 100% of your donation. There's more information about that. Go to ubs.com/Optimus. In the meantime, listen again to this and every episode, including our archive of other brilliant visionaries, at monocle.com and all good podcast platforms. In turbulent times, a little inspiration has never been more important. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.